tonight, I'm going to talk about school closings within the context of its impact on our budget process and four-year plan. And then I'll tie that into the 26-27 budget process. Tonight, the super and I are just setting expectations for the process based upon the decision of the school closings. Edmir, next slide. So, some introductory comments. The 26, because we have four new board members too, a lot of this will be new to you. I encourage you to call me, set up training sessions, whatever you need to get us through this. Anyway, the 26-27 budget process is scheduled to begin January 26th. That's when we release the superintendent's annual kickoff memo, along with the budget process packets that we distribute out to every department and every participant in the budget process. Prior to that official kickoff date, we expect to get the governor's proposed state aid budget. That's what really kicks us off. That's what's going to tell us how much money we have to work with next year. And we'll also complete our very important level one budget projection. This sort of sets the tone. You got your initial governor's budget. We incorporate current staffing with staff longevity and contract increases, benefit projections, charter projections, and the superintendent has also will by that time provide us some direction on the other expenditure items. We can't do an accurate level one budget projection without a decision on school closings. It's too impactful. So, Edmir, next slide. Oh, this is a little small, but so the superintendent recommends that no schools are going to be closed in the 26-27 year. We appreciate the time commitment of the committee members, but based upon feedback from the community and other constituencies and various other factors expressed by the superintendent, it's just not the right time to close schools in 26-27. I want to make like a personal comment real quick to commend Sharon Brown for her focus upon the direction given to her by the board in a board rec and her consistency and stewardship during that entire process. This is a delay in the school closing process. The superintendent is working on a new process, utilizing an external source to compile the data, involve input from the city of Buffalo and community groups, and make recommendations to the board. More details will follow. The district will never achieve a balanced budget without school closings and the consolidation of facilities, and it will eventually run out of fund balance. Yesterday, the superintendent and I met with the control board, our external auditors, to discuss this decision and its impact on our four-year plan. Very quickly, this four-year plan, which you all have a copy, this is our board-approved and control board-approved financial plan for 4 years. This is how we are measured, and this is how we plan our operations for a four-year period. We're a $1.3 billion organization. You need a document like this to guide your finances. It's very similar to what the superintendent's constructing with his strategic plan, but from a financial standpoint. So we met with the control board. We talked to them about no school closings because that was an integral part of the four-year plan and our financial plan. When you deviate on that large of a scale, you call the control board, you call your external auditors. That's one of the constituencies you discuss. It was a very positive meeting from my perspective. But they are going to hold us to still achieving our fund balance objectives. We're not going to close school, so what are you going to do to not do that, but still keep your objectives and meet your objectives for your fund balance? We discussed that with them, and we're going to just provide some outlines of that tonight. It is important to note that the two other key components of our four-year plan, they are being implemented. The closure of virtual pathways and the reduction of 100 budgeted FTEs. So, we're in the process of developing a plan B to offset the projected loss of cost savings from not closing schools and to achieve the fund balance targets that are incorporated in our four-year plan. This includes returning the district to pre-COVID staffing levels. So, plan B will involve additional FTE and cost cuts and potential revenue enhancements. It will impact every area of the district's operations, including central office, schools, programming, contracts with vendors. The superintendent, as I'll mention in a bit, but it's right on the tip of my tongue as I read that, he's charged the budget department with go top to bottom, every line, every contract, and the old justifications for spending this money, they may no longer apply. So we're taking a fresh look at everything. This decision will also impact union negotiations. It's our largest expenditure. So, Admir, if you turn to the next slide, the 26-27 budget process. Here's our budget calendar. Very hard to read, but you do have a hard copy, I hope. Again, we're a $1.3 billion organization. We're very large and complex. But we have in place a well-documented, clearly communicated, and successful process and procedures for the budget. The time frames and the due dates and the items that incorporate all the different aspects of the budget are included right on this document. I'll just mention a few. Number one, on or about January 15th, the governor releases her budget proposal for our state aid revenues. That sets the tone. About a week after that, now we have our revenues, we'll construct a level one budget. This will give the superintendent and his management team and this board an initial starting point. And it's basically saying, what would our deficit or surplus look like based upon our current staffing, our current expenditures, projections for charter schools and benefits, our debt service numbers. It's a starting point, but it's a very valuable one. As I mentioned earlier, on January 26th, the budget process will officially kick off with the superintendent's budget memo where he just outlines the challenges he sees, how he plans to address them, and what he's expecting from the district in terms of participation in this budget process. Budget packets are released, very detailed, user manuals for every department, every clerical staff that enters budget entry. So that's the official start, January 26th. On about February 6th, we're anticipating the release of the school-based budget books. We're currently doing the enrollments projections for each school. That includes classroom numbers and sizes. All of that's being incorporated into, again, a very detailed, well-documented, successful school-based budget process. I should mention, Rochester and others often call us to incorporate our school-based budget process. So it's tried and true, that's all I'm saying. Training sessions for all staff are done in early February. And then on 3/13, all departments will have entered all their non-staff expenditure requests. This is a bottom-up budget process. So then we have what's called the level two budget. That'll be reviewed by the superintendent and this board. And that's a second look at how we could potentially navigate our financial challenges. The school-based budget wraps up at the end of March. And then we really have what's called the level three budget. We'll have a final state revenue budget. It's passed by the legislator, not by the governor. We'll plug those numbers in, and then we can really see how it looks the superintendent will start making decisions on further cuts, use of fund balance, and things like that. The bottom part of this chart is we have to present our budget to the City of Buffalo, to the control board, and to this board for approval. That all happens during late April, early May. So it's almost a four-month process. And we'll be kicking it off, you gotta remember the date, January 26th. So, I've covered some important topics. Add me your last slide. But I'll just wrap it up this way. We're not closing schools. That's not going to be in the 26-27 budget. But the superintendent has charged the budget team with aggressively looking for additional cost reductions and revenue enhancement opportunities to incorporate and offset the fact that we're not closing schools. I'll just make a... Well, for example, on Monday this week, the superintendent working with his cabinet has identified approximately 45 central office positions to be cut next year. Well, that was great work. Some of the best I've seen during the budget process. I think what underlines it is a change in mindset. And I think the superintendent is really pushing that down to his cabinet and his management team. So the successful implementation of what we're calling Plan B, probably not the best and most creative thing, it's going to require the board's understanding of these issues as well. And what I mean by that is in our quarterly reports, you should really read them and look at how deficits impact, one, our cash flow statements, but two, our fund balance. That'll give you the perspective to understand a little better what the superintendent is proposing in his budgets. And lastly, it's going to take all of us working together. So the full support of the superintendent's proposed budget, including during and after the school-based budget process. So, there's the big decision on school closings, and that's where we stand from a budget process and what to expect. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Can I make a few comments before Madam Vice President here? I think that was a really tough decision that we're able to work with our team to be able to use different venue instead of closing those two schools. I just want to be really blunt when it comes to how we came up to that decision. So the plan was to be able to capture somewhere around $3 to $5 million if we close two schools. That means the FTE positions in that school as well as all the operation cost of running those two schools. Approximately $3 to $5 million. So I was able to work with my team and say, let's try to look for another way of capturing that $3 to $5 million. That's the work we did. We started with a 45 position that we're able to capture. And some of those positions, they are vacancies. Other, there may be some personnel, people that's going to be impacted, but it's going to be minimal. Based on the numbers that I have, probably about 80% is going to be, we're trying to capture some of those positions that they were vacant. And some of those positions, they were vacant for 2 years. And having conversations, we said we don't need to keep on posting those positions. We're really proactive. We're able to have conversations with our union, because they're going to feel the pains as well, because some of the membership is going to be reduced. I think this is the right thing to do. Instead of closing two schools and the impact in the community, it was not going to be good at this point. So moving forward, how did we get to that $78 million deficit? Based on my listening and learning that's happened across the nations, when we got all this COVID money, SR funds, we added a lot of positions. I think for BPS, we added probably somewhere around 400 positions. And then we're able to cut. We did not cut all 400. We probably cut about 250. And we still had about 150 other positions lingering somewhere. I think I was talking with someone, asked me, are you going to get back to pre-COVID? I said, no, because we have needs, mental needs that we did not have prior to COVID among our students and staff as well. We still need those positions as well. So we're gonna do our due diligence. And when it comes to cuts, we started with my cabinet. I just wanted to show that example. And then a lot of people, a lot of positions going to be impacted at the central office level. Now, if we go to the school level, I remember when I interviewed for these positions, I was doing my research. Our class size was really decent. And I did my tour. I went to all the 60 schools. There are some schools with 6 students in the classroom. So average in the district, we have 1 teacher for 14 students. If we go for 1 teacher to 15, is that decision going to impact student learning? I don't think so. So those are the conversation that we started with central office, and we're gonna have those conversation with our principals as well. If we change our mindset, I think we're gonna be at a good place to be able to capture this $78 million deficit. We cannot run the district with that kind of deficit. I don't know, maybe our other district, I've seen some practices where superintendent work with staff, they get a budget in place, then you may have board members also requesting for additional positions for specific schools. And I'm gonna ask our board, as we're starting fresh, if we can restrain from that practices, it's gonna help us to be able to eliminate our deficit and be able to get ourselves in a fiscally responsible district. That's what Jim was trying to say, not trying to articulate that really clearly. We're gonna need cooperation from our board to make sure we're not adding more positions. If we do so, we're gonna get back to ground zero and not being able to have progress. So I just wanted to make those comments. I don't want us to get to a point where superintendent say we're not gonna close schools, we're gonna be in a good position, but if we keep on adding positions, we're gonna get back to where we started. So thank you, and I'm gonna pass it back to board member Rodriguez.
Thank you, Superintendent. Colleagues, did you have questions?
Hi, Tanya, this is Stefan. I have, I guess, a couple questions and comments about this.
Yes, sir.
Again, thank you for letting me speak. So first, I would just like to say, Dr. Mubanga has been real good with communication and things like that about this, these school closures. As some of you may know, I was able to sit in on the school closure committee because the Honorable Sharon Cotman appointed me to sit on that committee last year. And I do respect the fact that, you know, we are finding another plan then to close schools and have the community in an uproar as of for right now. But I kind of like got a couple questions that you can answer at another time, but this is some of the questions that the community has, or they're asking me, like, why aren't we closing 2 schools right now? Did you not like the recommendation from the committee? Because when we were, as a committee member, when we were in the committee, we were told by some of your representation, that whatever the committee would be, actually we were told by your representation, and also some of the board members who sat in as chair people, that whatever the recommendation from the committee, I'm sorry, whatever the recommendation that the committee came up with, that you would accept it. No matter what it would be, you would accept it. That doesn't mean that the board would have to vote on it and it would come to pass, but you would accept it. So, you know, you came up with school 90, everybody agreed on it. School 3 came out the woodworks, whatever the case may be. So I knew school 3 might have been a problem to close. And I'm not saying school 90 should have been just focused on and targeted, but like I said, we were told that the recommendation will be listened to, that you would accept it and that you would take it to the board. And I know, I like the idea of, you know, not hiring more employees, looking at some of the employees that we don't need them to be here. But my question is, when Jim talked about 4 years, I want to know, what's the difference in closing two schools in a year or in 2 years than right now? You know, if we have a budget issue, we're talking about $78 million, we have a budget issue, we're going to have to revisit this again. And we put the community in an uproar from the committee, people really stressed out, from the community really stressed out, parents, students, right before the holidays, right before Christmas or the New Year's, everybody was stressed out. I had personal conversations with Jim, and even in the committee, he said schools has to close. More than two schools should close. You know what I'm saying? This is coming from who we trust with our money. He said that we need to have more than two schools closed. So I'm just kind of confused. And lastly, like, what's the plan if we're not going to close schools? What's the plan to bring students back to our district? Like, we need to have a plan in place to bring kids back to our district. When I was a student on the board, we had about 36,000 students. Now we have about 30,000, so we lost students. It's not your fault. You just got here, Dr. Mubega, so I can't blame that on you. But what is our plan to bring our students back into our schools? You know, when I'm riding in the car and I got the radio on, I hear great advertisement from charter schools. You know, I ride and see billboard, you know, from charter schools. We got Catholic schools and charter schools that have all these great curricular activities and sports and programming and stuff like that. The suburb district have all these nursing programs, all type of stuff. What are our stand as a district, you as a superintendent, that we are going to do to draw these students back to our Buffalo public school system? Because me as a committee, as a community person, not even as a board member, I don't think it makes sense to have school buildings that can fit close to 800 to 1,000 students, but only is operating with about 200 to 300 students. It just doesn't make sense to me. We get reimbursed or we get paid by the student, not by the building that's open. So if we can consolidate some of these students into closer school buildings where we are saving money and we're not wasting money. And again, the school buildings can be repurposed. We can work with the city of Buffalo to have it as some type of community center, resource center. We don't have to leave the community vacant. I know they was going in the uproar about the school in the Fruit Belt. If that was closed, the school bill going to be gentrified, or it's going to be this, or it's going to be that. Who's to say that we can't repurpose that school for another school, community resources, anything? I just think we need to look at this thing, because a lot of people are reaching out to my phone and off the hook all day, from committee members that was on the committee, from parents that was worried about their school closing. And I know I'm new, and I don't have a lot of answers. Probably no answers at all, but these are just my questions to you or to anybody that's in charge of this. What is our plan?
All right, thank you, Board Member Wright. You are right. Let me say this. First of all, thank you for the work that the committee did. I accepted the recommendation. The only thing I did not do, I did not bring it to the board.
Okay.
So your recommendation was really accepted, and we really appreciate the work, the time commitment, and the expertise that was around the table. But at the same time, as you know, as we do this work, we also have to listen to our community. We also heard our community. We heard different versions. I can give you one, and I don't want to quote the person. The question was asked, when you close the schools, then what? Are we going to abandon those schools, or do we have a plan for those buildings? Some of the questions we asked, I don't think we had answers for those questions, because we've seen some of the buildings that we were able to close in the past, and they still linger there. They are out there in the community. I got to this job, it's been almost 4 or 5 months now, and their recommendation for closing those schools, I did not want to delay it, because I knew we have to start with the budget process. I think the plan was probably to capture, as I said earlier, $3 to $5 million. Now we have a plan that we're going to be able to capture those $5 million. That $5 million is going to be reoccurring for the 4-year plan? Yes. If we eliminate those positions, that's going to be the 4 years. Whatever $3 or $5 million we're going to capture next year for the next 4 years, we're going to be in the same place if we did close the two schools. But if you look at the plan, were we going to balance the budget or we're going just to reduce the deficit? The plan was to reduce the deficit so that we won't be relying on the fund balance to kick in about $80 million, probably to get to $30 or $40 million. But eventually, the plan is to be able to balance the budget. That's where the conversation is going to happen, to be able to close schools. And I did not want us to do the work. And now, at this point, I really felt that we needed an independent group to come and be able to come and give us really robust recommendations, not only to close school for financial reasons, but what are we going to do with those buildings? That's where I would like the city and everybody else to be involved around that conversation, because we are all going to be responsible for it. Sure. But I just really wanted to be clear. I accepted the recommendations. We did not want to waste time of the committee, but based on the feedback we're able to receive from the community and the plan B, working with my staff, we felt comfortable that we should be able to get a saving in lieu of closing those two schools.
And I do thank you for your feedback, and I do appreciate the alternate route that you are taking to not close the schools right now. I'm not saying I'm for having two schools closed, but I'm just saying the route that you are taking is just phenomenal. And then we're going to probably have to revisit this in a year or two, and how the community is in the uproar now about two schools closing. They're going to do the same thing, whether we bring in somebody do a survey, not a committee, whether the board handle it. They're going to be in the uproar then too. You know what I'm saying? So that's just my biggest concern, is that you know, I don't want to have a parent not be able to sleep at night again in 2 years because of we're closing two schools or closing three schools. You know what I'm saying?
As you know, across the nation, anytime you have to close schools, they're going to be folks that's going to be really upset. And at some point, we have to do that. But I really want to make sure the process is going to be robust, that we need to bring a lot of stakeholders around the table as we're making those decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Super. Thank you, Board Member Wright. Board Member Sulich, Board Member McKeachin had a question, and she had raised her hand virtually. I didn't see her. She's joining us via Zoom. Is it okay? I call on her, and then I'll come back to your question.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, and I'm sorry. Vice President. Right, Madam Vice President. Just getting my titles right. Sorry, Board Member McKeachin.
Here. Thank you, Jim, for your presentation, as always. I just wanted to put out a request, just given kind of some of the chaos that ensued at the end of the budget process last year. I know one of the things we just put out there or talked about was the possibility of getting that finalized budget to vote to us before May. I know you listed out a rigorous calendar and all sorts of things that have to happen, but I just wanted to uplift that again. I think receiving that budget, that final budget in May, and being bound to that May board meeting makes it very difficult, and often puts pressure on us as board members to have to make a decision, even if it is one that, you know, does warrant more conversation. And that's just given timing because it bleeds into the new school year. Sure. So I just wanted to put that out there again, if that's something that, you know, might be able to be pushed up, even if it is just April, that gives us the opportunity for a whole nother board meeting if there are additional conversations, you know, that might need to be had.
Well noted. I'll review everything, and again, it depends on how we get started. So I'll review that, and I hear what you're saying. I'll get back to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Board.
Did you want to call me officially, or should I just go?
No, I was just going to try to get your title right. Madam Vice President Sulich, carry on. Thank you so much. I'm sorry about the mistitle.
As far as the school closing, I just wanted to tie it into Rodney and Leslie and SOFG. I just want to remind us, board members, whether elected from a district seat or a citywide seat, shall act. Not maybe, not could, may, might, shall act as a unified board focused on the improvement of the Buffalo Public Schools as a whole. So I think we could keep that in mind the next time we take on this process. Honorable Wright, we have been having this conversation, and it is, I am excited to see what we will do. But I remember tuning in 2 years ago, you know, the sky is falling, we have to right size, we must do this. And then it was, it almost felt impossible, you know, like get together, you have 6 weeks, do it, bam. But yeah, I am very grateful. I mean, for people took PTO, took their lunch, came every week. When we were in Albany, I mean, the committee stepped up and went out to the community meeting. Whether it's the budget, school closings, I do think we can do a better job being more transparent and getting the information out there. I was shocked by how much disinformation and misinformation is out there. You know, like the Buffalo Public Schools do not own any buildings. A lot of people thought we were going to sell off buildings to make money. I mean, just for example. So I think we can have, I have ideas, but I would like to get more information out about that, and also things like school-based budgets, the SBMTs. I found this past year a lot of people came to me when it was too late, or how we had parents come and speak in July. Oh, can we do this for the budget for next school year? We should be having those conversations. It looks like, you know, January, February, March, people should be coming and speaking. So I think we're thinking like May, or maybe, I'm not sure what the public might think, the community, but like, oh, that's a recommendation, but that's like we're adopting a budget. So I would like us to be able to reach out or think about, be mindful of that to our constituents and to our schools earlier in the year. I did have a specific question, too, I guess. Can you give us some examples of revenue enhancement opportunities? Like, what does that mean? And have we looked into overtime? I don't know if we have a breakdown of where it's going, but there was a substantial amount of money.
Super. Can I take this one?
Yes.
I appreciate that. and Stefan, just to say, I'm fully in support, and I think it's a wise decision the superintendent made. But our regarding the financial consequences of us running deficits, this is why I said you need to review the cash flow and the impact on our fund balance, which are produced every 3 months and provided to this board for 3 years. $400 billion we started the year. We were at 500, then we were at 450, we lost 50 million last year, now we're at 400. If we hit the budget this year, it goes down $80 million. Now you're at 320. Next year's deficit, the initial projection, is for 30 million. Now you're down to 220. You have to keep 200 million aside of your fund balance. This is no joke. Our fund balance and our cash flows get depleted dollar for every deficit. As the superintendent clearly just phrased it, we're projecting going from $78 million deficit to a $30 million deficit. That's still a $30 million deficit, which is a dollar-for-dollar drain on your cash and your fund balance. The only way this district can ever achieve an actual balance budget, is to close schools and consolidate our facilities. Our classrooms, 80% of them have less than 20 kids in them. We have the same amount of buildings as we did when we had 4,000 more students. So this is happening all over New York State, all over the country, but you do not want to wait until your fund balance reaches a critical level. And the biggest financial drain on us is the because the super's addressing the personnel issues right this year, is the overcapacity in our schools and having classrooms with less than 20 kids in. I can't stress that enough as your financial. Regarding your last two points, yes, the superintendent is very focused on the overtime issue, but we should also understand what is in overtime. The majority of the overtime is at BTF 1/200 for programs like summer school and after school programs. Then we know that there's about 5 or 6 departments that we're focusing on to reduce that number. But this district could not operate without overtime. We tend to sometimes oversimplify things or generalize, and you get an agenda and you go after it. The superintendent is very circumspect about the overtime. We're breaking it down and focusing on those areas where we can save $3-4 million. And revenue enhancement, I'm sorry if I'm taking up too much time. Guess we should think. I will provide you a list of 10 items that over the past 5 years have generated in excess of $20 million in additional revenue. And I've reported this to the board within quarterly reports, within end of year summaries. I know, but we have. I think we've been very communicative, but it doesn't seem
to... Is it like a food service, for example, or
no,
off the top of your...
Okay. No. Give me 3. Invoicing to other districts for services our staff perform, number one. Scrubbing of ELL and special ed data and submitting revised SAMS forms that generate extra foundation aid. The list goes on. So, anyway, I've said enough. Sorry.
Can you produce it via email, send it to all board members?
Absolutely.
No, I understand it's not sustainable to keep on this road. But also, as I've said, not to be penny wise and pound foolish. Like, I think sometimes we're not thinking about the long term or unintended consequences, like when we went from 611 to 811s. I think sometimes you're like, okay, we're going to save this money. And I do wonder if it's just long term we ended up spending more.
Thank you, Madam Vice President. Colleague, I'll call on you in 1 second. I know Board Member Bowen had a question, and Board Member Hawkins, I see your hand. I'm sorry, I can't see your face. Board Member Bowen, did you want to continue?
Thank you, Talia. And thank you, Jim, for providing us all this new information for us and the board members. But I have a question of, it's January 7th right now. What happens on January 15th if we don't get the money we want?
No, that's a great question. We have a long track record, we have trend analysis, and we also have initial indicators from the state based on our prior SAM submissions, our enrollments, our spend counts. We have that initial number. The governor's proposed budget usually is pretty close to those initial numbers, except in cases where there's a state emergency and they're slashing the education budget. So we have a good indicator, but you know, in my line of work, you don't believe anybody until you see the report, you see the dollars.
So we have to revisit this if we do have bad news?
Oh, sure. Yes, to be honest, yes.
And then?
I think it was 5 years ago, state cut our aid $25 million. That's not going to, well, yes. We would have to revisit it if that happened.
All right. And then, for the superintendent, are we, as board members, going to be able to see the recommendation from the committee?
Yes, we'll make it transparent. I got a report from Chief Braun.
Okay.
We'll be able to send an email to you all what was the recommendation.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Bowen. Board Member Hawkins, do you want to continue, sir?
Yes, and thank you so much, Board Member Rodriguez. Our questions for Superintendent and CFO here. I have a series of questions. K-3 is a big issue. Now, I know I scammed over the 4-year plan just briefly, but you know, it intrigued me to ask a few questions in regards to that. How much are we spending per student below grade level in K-3, and how has that changed year over year?
I'll get you the information. Yeah, I don't have it on me right now.
Just speak up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have that information to answer your question right now, but we can get it for you.
Okay. All right. My next question, and you talked about it earlier. Budget lines. They're strictly tied to really improving the literacy outcomes versus general staffing.
I'm sorry, would you repeat your question?
Which budget lines are directly tied to improving literacy outcomes versus general staffing?
I would have to see you offline and understand the question better and then gather that data for you.
But I'll say this, that's a question that Chief Batticelli can provide, and we also have additional support from our federal funds, Title I as well, that is a supplement to the needs of our academics as well. So we should be able to provide that. I think Chief Batticelli will be the right person to be able to break it down for you.
Okay, I have some more. Yeah. I have questions. I reviewed the package just briefly, and it just prompted me to ask a few questions in regards to it. We all know that there's an attendance problem, right? Attendance staffing has declined while attendance remains a challenge. So what is our return investment on those attendance interventions?
All right, that's a good question. And again, as I'm completing my 100 days, I've learned a lot of things, and I'll be giving out my reports. And I think the good thing that we're going to do is starting February, that's where we're going to have a strategic plan development. And we're going to have all the data, quantitative and qualitative, all the feedback that we got from town halls. And we should be able to consider all those as we're going to develop our strategic plan.
Excellent. I still have one. Mr. Barnes, how much additional state aid would a 1-2% increase in attendance would that generate?
State aid is not based on attendance. It's based on enrollment.
That's right.
Sales tax from Erie County is based on attendance. We get about $60 million a year in sales tax revenue from Erie County. That is based on attendance.
Okay.
By the way, we call it sensitivity analysis. What if it goes down 4%? What if it goes up 3%? So I can get you whatever you need.
Yes, sir. Now, if staffing were aligned strictly to enrollment, what reductions would naturally occur?
I can give you a general answer.
I think the formula is not that simple. As we're going to go do the budget process with our schools, with ASL being their principals, and the needs of the schools are different. Are there schools that are struggling, that they're probably getting additional money with Title I as well? So the formula is not that simple. It's a conversation that needs to happen, and we have to look historically how much we're able to give, and then based on the needs that we have in this year, how we need to make those adjustments. So that's pretty much open conversation with school leaders.
Excellent. And what percentage of the general fund FTEs are classroom direct versus administrative or support?
I'd say 3,200 out of about 5,600. I'll get you that number too.
Okay, excellent. And lastly, what programs supported by the reserves would disappear once the reserves are exhausted?
The reserves are exhausted, it means we can't make payroll. It's much more dramatic than you think. So you got to monitor it. When you approach a point of concern, you got to stop and reassess your operations and your budgets.
Excellent. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. I'll say this. All the questions, additional requests that we have, we make sure that we send it to all board members.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you for your diligence and your preparation, Board Member Hawkins. Madam Vice President, did you have a question or did you want to move on?
Yes, I just want to ask, Plan B, now is that going to balance the budget and for how long?
It's not going to balance the budget.
Okay.
I think when you look at a four-year plan, we want to get to a pretty much somewhere around $30 million deficit. Closing the two schools was going to be about $3 million to $5 million.
That we would recapture.
So, yeah, the Plan B pretty much capturing the same amount.
Okay. Okay, so then we would be out of the deficit, right?
No, we'll still be in a deficit.
Okay, so
the deficit now is about $78 million.
Right.
based on the four-year plan, we really want to start getting somewhere around $30 million,
which is good. And so closing two schools would have done that?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Yes.
And then after closing two schools, how would we have balanced the budget? If we had closed the two schools now.
Right. So closing two schools, along with the other measures, virtual pathways, FTE reductions, only got us down to a $30 million deficit.
Got it.
And the control board and external auditors and the state, how they monitor us is your fund balance. Mm-hmm. So they were okay with a $70 million deficit this year and a $30 million deficit next year, because that resulted in a $274 million fund balance at the end of next year.
Right.
Now we changed our plans. We think we're going to still hit that fund balance target at the end of next year, but we will still have a stubborn $30 to $40 million deficit. That's where additional facility consolidations will
right.
have to occur.
Yeah, so in other districts like Rochester, they just closed 11 schools.
Correct.
So eventually we will still need to have more than two schools closed.
Right.
Yeah. That's the plan.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Vice President. Madam President, I had a question. Mr. Hawkins, or School Board Member Hawkins, I'll come right back to you. Madam President, I have a question.
I do. Thank you. Chief Barnes, as always, and thank you for your presentation. I guess this is an added question to Vice President Janita's comment. So it sounds like, and I know Chief Barnes, you have always said school closings would help with the deficit. Because it is happening not only in New York State but across the country. People are grappling with this issue. Mm-hmm. The question I have is, and we need to be transparent to the community, that we are closing schools for this year, but we still need to revisit the issue of closing mm-hmm. schools. And I know, Dr. Mavenga, you have plans for having experts come in and map, doing some mapping across the district. We do have schools that have low enrollment. Somebody mentioned it. A school that could easily accommodate 800 students, and they may have 200 right now. So you have to look at consolidations, you have to look at, you know, a number of variables to right-size the district. And so I think in our transparency, we need to say that, because it sounds like right now we're just putting a Band-Aid on the fact that we have a $78 million deficit. So when I came on the board, and Larry, you remember this as well, in 2019, we always had a deficit of at least $30 million. Right now, it sounds like it has doubled, and that's where the issue lies, correct?
The issue really lies on the impact of deficits on our fund balance. I can't stress that enough. Fund balance, you could sort of translate to how much cash do you have on hand. We lost $30 million last year. That reduced our cash by $30 million. Reduced our fund balance by $30 million. This year, if we hit budget, we'll lose another $80 million. Your fund balance is dropping to a level that could be concerning, if not reduced or fixed. And I'm sorry, the superintendent and I were talking about this earlier. We were running surpluses for 7-8 years. For three of those years, it was largely due to the assistance of ARP ESSER. When ARP ESSER ended, we lost all that revenue, but we maintained the expenditures of 150 employees. Charter schools went up, benefits went up, and last year, largely because of the 150 FTEs and other programs, about $10 million in our ESSER programs we maintained in the general fund, we had our first deficit in probably 9 years.
Thank you.
Sure.
Board Member Hawkins, and then we can go to Board Member Wright. And then I may have a question. So I just want to note that at some point. I'm really excited to facilitate. Board Member Hawkins, can you carry on?
Yeah, because I'm probably for all us new board members on the deficit and, you know, dealing with a $1 billion budget and how we got to from always being around 30 million to now that number doubling. Were we banking on something, you know, budget wise every year that counted that we didn't get?
Mookie. Actually, we ran surpluses for 7 years.
That's
our
right.
Our first deficit that we incurred was last year, and that's because we didn't cut all of the ARP ESSER related expenditures. We shifted a portion of them to the general fund. 150 staff members, about $10 million in programs that were started during ARP ESSER. They were supposed to end when ARP ESSER ended.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't cut them all, we moved them to the general fund. So that's the reason for the $78 million projected debt. The superintendent is now focused on those ARPA, bringing it down to pre-COVID levels or thereabouts.
But why was it moved instead of just exhausted, I guess? Why was it moved?
If you want to talk about political pressure?
If you knew that we had to get rid of it, why push the can
the
down?
The board would not approve it, frankly.
Hmm.
The superintendent didn't propose it fully, and the board would not approve it. And to be, if we're talking honestly, the board actually added 100 FTEs after the school-based budget process was completed, exacerbating the problem.
So how can we, as a new board, fix that problem?
Okay. I just said don't ask to hire anymore.
Good job, Doctor. Can I go real quick, Ty? I just want to circle. Okay, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to note for our colleagues that Board Member Scott has a question. So Board Member Wright, if you want to carry on, and then we'll have Board Member Scott ask this question. And then Board Member Scott, you remain unmuted. I don't know if you know that or not, but I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, so I just have a quick comment. It's going back to what Dr. Brown said. You know, the news broke out today that no schools are being closed down. Two schools not being closed down, no schools are being closed down. And this, I wrote this down, what's the difference to closing school now or next year? We still gonna have to close some school now.
Sure.
Two schools, three schools. I remember Jim said the district could sustain closing 7 schools if we had to. Didn't you say that? If we had to, the district could sustain closing like 5 or 7 schools, right? So I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just, you was being, you know, we need to save money. So
yes.
I just don't want the community, I just don't want, you know, us to put the message out there that no schools are being closed down, we're going to not hire, and we're going to be good, and then next year, we're in the same process, we want to look at the recommendation that the committee put forth, we want to see why they put that forth, and like I said, I respect Dr. Mubang, and I love what you're doing, I just don't like where we are playing with people's emotions, and on their heartstrings. It might not be school 90, it might not be school 3 right now, but in next year, in 2 years, it's gonna be schools being closed, and my board phone and my email will be blowing up, people will be hitting my Facebook and pulling me over on the streets.
It's always gonna be a very emotional, triggering experience.
So that's why I said, what's the difference of doing it now and then waiting next year or 2 years? That's just my biggest concern or question. If we had a committee, and the committee was to hear, and they did a recommendation, whether, you know, both schools, or we could either even had the committee go back and say, hey, you're not going to set this one school, look at another school. You know what I'm saying? We could have did it so many other ways, but to just ignore that for right now and then say, hey, we're going to have to close, we're not going to hire, but we're going to have to close schools next year or 2 years. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry, it don't make sense to me.
Thank you, Board Member Wright. Board Member Scott?
So, I know we're running out of time, but Chief Burns alluded to it. just for a better understanding, we had this influx of federal funds as a result of COVID, and that stopped. And that's where we are now. We're running surpluses, as Chief Burns indicated, but that's where now, without that funding and then adding all those positions, we are trying to then close or make up for the lack of federal funding that we're no longer receiving. But Chief Burns, I just want you to, and I know staffing is the biggest increase for the deficit, but also we began or expanded our contracts with vendors as a result of that federal stimulus. And that also is something that we need to continue to revisit in reducing or considering for reduction in closing the deficit.
Larry, you're right on, and one of the charges from the superintendent was review of the contracts too, every one of them, but you're right. Probably 5 to 10 million in contracts grew during the ARPA-ESSER period. And, you know, questionable if they're still needed.
And I'll just close with this in regards to the school closures. I've said it a few times. It needs to be. It's a very obviously. It's emotionally trying for so many people, and in my opinion, it's going to be no matter what. But I think if it's systematic and it's methodical, it can, I think, reduce the pain that it causes. And I think that's something that we need to fully consider moving forward with closing schools.
Thank you, Board Member Scott.
Thank you, Chairwoman Rodriguez.
Thank you for using my title. Do any of my colleagues have any other questions? Because I wanted to make a comment myself and pose a question to you, Chief Brent. Yep. Okay. So just in response to some of the questions about the timing for school closure, I just want to note that for some of the constituents in the West Side, they had their school closed in Puerto Rico. And when we were explaining what receivership was, there was a lot of emotional fear. So Chief Barnes, one of the questions I'm wondering, and kind of alluding to some of what my colleagues are noting in terms of the level of urgency and emotion, is whether the district has ever produced any. Have you or has your office ever worked with the communications department to create any visuals so that we could have a reference to kind of explain all of the different costs of maintaining a school building? And then the other thing I'd like to suggest to my colleagues as a whole is that we adopt operational comparisons. So Chief Bonds, pointedly my question was going to be, are there any districts our size that are running at a balanced budget in your state? And if there are, can we continue to talk about our district alongside their operational procedures? Is there a way that our board can adopt operational examples so that we're not specifically just talking about our condition, but that we're looking at similarly sized districts and understanding if balancing the budget is a financial reality in today's time?
Good questions, good observations. I can get you any data you want, classroom sizes, building maintenance costs, etc. And I'll work with you on getting that and reviewing it with the super before we send it along. Secondly, what you're talking about is like KPI statistics and metrics. We do participate with the Big Five in some of that. And I can work on producing some of that data for you. And then lastly, I don't know about the deficits and surpluses of all other districts. I do know that we stack up or always exceed the other districts in terms of fund balance. Now we're jeopardizing it somewhat with our deficits.